could use... You know what we could use? We could use an election. We could use a great big national election where everyone turned out, all the Democrats, all the Republicans, all the independents, the socialists, the Greens, the, I don't know, what other parties do we have? The Libertarians. Sorry, Ron Paul, didn't mean to leave you out. We could use a great big national election where the entire nation turned out and said once and for all, this is the direction that we see for the country. What? What? We had one of those 2 years ago? What the hell happened? Hey, well, we'll find out. We'll talk about it tonight. Hey, everyone. Welcome to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow in for Mike tonight. Once again, we are broadcasting live from the Left Coast from beautiful downtown Burbank at the K-Talk AM 1150 studios out here in Los Angeles. Delighted you could join us here. We're bringing things together somewhat at the last minute, putting the show together tonight. But we're glad you could join us for it. We'd love you to stop by, if you wish, at our chat room at bradblog.com, where I think For Earth and Dez and Jeannie Dean are holding down the fort. And I think Jeannie Dean is even in the house here tonight. So maybe, who knows, maybe we'll hear from her later. Anything could happen. Because we're making it up, as usual, as we go along. Not only could we use an election to determine the future of this country, the direction of this country, we could use a Republican Party that wasn't insane. We could use a Democratic Party that wasn't scared to death, who could get their act together and come up with a direction for this country that supports the people, that stands with the people, without fear for once, finally, maybe, someday. Well, we'll see if that comes about. We're going to talk about the right-wing assault on everything that we hold dear in this country, beginning with Social Security. But first, this Irene. You know, this is just absolutely incredible what is going on still to this day. Now, a lot of the media have already turned away. I was listening to MSNBC on the way over here. Lawrence was talking about Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney? Dick Cheney has a book, so we need to talk about him. At the same time, more than 40 are now dead in 11 states in what now appears to be the third deadliest U.S. storm in more than 30 years, behind right now only Katrina in 2005 and Hurricane Floyd in 1999. This is a full-blown disaster, or as Governor Peter Shumlin said, his state has a full-blown flooding catastrophe on their hands. Dozens of towns are cut off entirely from the rest of the state up there in Vermont. It's not just Vermont. Also flooding, unbelievable flooding up in the Catskills in New York, in Windham, New York, Keene in the Adirondacks, in Massachusetts. We saw in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, Charlemont. You know, towns that don't happen to be Manhattan. But I started hearing from these folks thanking us. We were covering what was going on out there while the media was all, you know, navel-gazing and saying, well, gosh, it didn't hit Manhattan, so I guess everything's all right. And this jackass, Howard Kurtz from CNN. Oh, don't get me started. Oh, that's okay. Go ahead. Get me started. I'll have plenty to say about Mr. Kurtz later on. Who had to be the first out of the box on Sunday morning to tell us all that, gosh, it looks like it was all just a bunch of hype. Howard Kurtz, by the way, he's a media critic. So, of course, his job is to critique the media. Shouldn't he know better, being in the media himself, being such a reliable source, as is the name of his CNN show, shouldn't he know better than to jump the gun? Didn't we learn anything 5 years ago, 6 years ago now, in Katrina, when everybody thought the morning after, oh, we dodged a bullet, everything's fine, nothing to worry about here? Have we learned nothing? Apparently not. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit later. But, you know, my concerns really are with Vermont and Massachusetts, Connecticut, upstate New York, these places that aren't getting adequate coverage as far as what is going on. We're going to be talking in a bit tonight with Robert Steierwalt from the Vermont Emergency Management Agency, to find out how they're doing up there, what the situation is on the ground. I understand they're actually airlifting food into folks, into these towns that are cut off in this hurricane of hype, as Howard Kurtz described it. So we're going to be finding out what the situation is there, and I'm also going to want to hear later on from you, from folks who are out there in those zones that are still flooded. Our number tonight, by the way, I forgot to give it out, is 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. I will want to hear from you tonight, particularly, as I said, if you're in those flood zones. Not right now, not this moment, because I'm going to get to a break shortly, because when we come back, we're going to have just one segment with him, but I want to have as much time as I can with Bill McKibben of 350.org. He is taking the lead in right now the protests that are ongoing even now at the White House. They have been going on for the last 2 weeks now, I believe, concerning the Keystone XL pipeline project that will ship an extraordinary amount of dirty oil from the Alberta oil sands all the way from Canada down to the Gulf of Mexico. And, of course, luckily, pipelines, they never spill, and we don't have to worry about, oh, what? Huh? People up in Montana have a different opinion to that? Yeah. People in Alaska, different opinion? Yeah, well, I suspect they do. So we're going to talk to Bill McKibben. There have so far been 595 arrests at the White House concerning these protests, trying to convince the Barack Obama administration to not give their approval for this extraordinary pipeline that will run some 1,700 miles across the USA, across farmlands. This is what it takes. This is what, you know, you've got a Democratic president, you know, came in. A lot of folks, a lot of progressives out there thought they had hope. There was going to be a change from what we saw with the Bush administration, and what are we getting? Well, last week the State Department said they're fine. They're fine with the Keystone XL pipeline. They're not worried about it at all. What could possibly go wrong? So these folks have been out there protesting now for weeks. We'll find out how long that is going to go and why it is important. Why this protest matters, because I'll tell you, the media, MSNBC, was watching Dick Cheney tonight, they have not been covering these protests at all, really, for the past 2 weeks, at least not that I've seen. We've tried to at bradblog.com and on our Green News Report. We'll have one of those for you later as well. In any case, let me get to a break here. We're going to come back with Bill McKibben from tarsandsaction.org and 350.org. A big, big, big show for you tonight. Glad you could join us here. Glad I could be here at the last minute. You're listening to Brad Friedman of bradblog.com on The Mike Malloy Show. Please stay with us. Haven't changed, had much to say. But man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike tonight. We are joined by Bill McKibben of 350.org. I should say the great Bill McKibben. I've been following him and his work at 350.org for quite some time. He has been out of the White House, I think, for the last 2 weeks or so, give or take time in and out of jail as the TarSandsAction.org protest continues concerning the Keystone XL pipeline and trying to keep Barack Obama from approving that 1,700-mile pipeline. Mr. McKibben, Dr. McKibben, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
It is such a pleasure to be with you, Brett.
Great to have you here. Glad you're out of jail for the moment. 595 arrests over the last 2 weeks out there at the White House?
I just came from the church where we're holding the training session for tomorrow, and there's looks like another 100 people set to end the day in handcuffs tomorrow. So this thing is building as it goes along. It's already by far the largest civil disobedience action in the environmental movement in a generation. And we're beginning to hope that it's reaching inside the White House a little bit.
What is the hope of getting arrested? I think you were looking at like 50 people a day at least getting arrested. What is your hope in getting arrested there? Will that get the administration's attention?
That's the hope. It's already taken what was a regional issue and a pretty obscure one 2 weeks ago and made it into a national issue, and got convinced every major environmental group to sign on to a very strong statement that this is the test for the president between now and the election. The reason I think that people are so willing to put themselves on the line here is that for once, the president gets to make a decision by himself. Instead of having to deal with, the, to my mind, dysfunctional Congress that
right.
has made him so often, this time, the guy's got a 20-foot open jump shot from the top of the key.
And that's because this deals with an international border, so the decision
right.
is not...
One of these sort of odd, he has to sign something called a Presidential Certificate of National Interest, because this thing is going to cross an international border. And he can decline it, and if he does, the pipeline won't be built, and as the Prime Minister of Alberta said a couple of weeks ago, we will be landlocked in oil as a result. That would be a good thing, because this is the second largest pool of carbon on Earth. It's second only to Saudi Arabia. When we found the oil fields in Saudi Arabia 70 years ago, nobody knew a thing about global warming, so of course we went ahead and did them. But if we do this on the same kind of scale, then Jim Hansen from NASA, the world's foremost climatologist, said recently it's, essentially game over, quote unquote, for the climate. That's why this is such a big deal. I don't know how it's going to come out, but I know that we've changed the odds some in the course of the last 2 weeks.
Now, you said today over at TarSandsAction.org that it seems as if the national media is finally beginning to pay some attention. They asked presidential press spokesman Jay Carney about it on Air Force One today.
That's right. During his press conference today, everybody said, what is the reaction to these protests in front of the White House? I think in part because when the president got to Minneapolis, there was a group of 40 or 50 there with a huge sign about the pipeline. This thing is spreading fast. There were people arrested in Montana yesterday trying to block the trucks carrying the equipment up to the tar sands. The State Department is hearing about it because there are pickets in front of the U.S. embassies in Egypt and in South Africa from people, big groups of people demanding that they stop. So they asked Jay Carney, and he said somewhat cryptically, "I have not told the president about it." Our hope is that they're not telling him for fear of, hurting his feelings or something. Most of the people who've been arrested so far have been wearing Barack Obama buttons and T-shirts from 2008. When I was in jail in the central cell block in D.C. for a couple of nights, which is exactly as much fun as it sounds like it might be, the guy who was next to me said, "You know what? The last time I was this uncomfortable, I was sleeping on the floor in the church in New Hampshire waiting to go knock on doors for Barack Obama. Mm. I really want to be reminded of why I was that excited about this guy.
Bill McKibben, when is that decision due? I know the State Department has done their environmental impact statement. They say they've given their thumbs up at the State Department. So when does Obama make his official decision?
Obama has said he'll do it sometime before the end of the year. That's all he said. And hopefully he's not going to rely too heavily on the State Department's environmental impact statement, because to call it incomplete would be, I'm a college instructor on occasion, and incomplete would be a good grade for this thing. They didn't even address, did not even mention the central issue here, which is how much carbon there is in those tar sands in Alberta. Instead, there's a kind of minute and endless dissection of how many leaks per kilometer of the pipeline would be acceptable, and so on and so forth.
So it's about the leaks and the spills, not necessarily the burning of carbon. I've just got another 30 seconds or so. I know we can't keep you over, Bill. But if he does not approve this pipeline, is it realistic to believe that all of this tar sand oil will not get used, will not get burned?
The only other pipeline they can run is west to the Pacific, and the First Nations tribes, the Indian tribes of Canada, have blocked that incredibly effectively for the last 5 years, and no one thinks that that block will be lifted anytime soon. Given enough time, maybe they'll figure out another way, but given enough time, maybe the world will come to its senses about climate change and stop doing this. If we can stop it for 10 years, that's an awfully good thing to have accomplished.
Keep up the good work, Bill. How long are you guys out there at the White House?
Here through Saturday morning, and Saturday morning will be a big rally and celebration. Everybody should come on down and join us if they're in the D.C. area.
Get more information.
Lafayette Park.
Lafayette Park.
TarSandsAction.org. TarSandsAction.org.
Very good. TarSandsAction.org. Bill McKibben from 350.org. Thank you, brother. Let's do this again sometime soon.
Absolutely.
All right.
Take
good
care.
Luck. You bet. Oh, man. What a mess.
Live from Progressive.
Next caller.
Hey, Flo, so what's up with the Snapshot discount?
It rewards your good driving habits, and it's our biggest discount ever.
Bigger than the safe driver discount?
Bigger.
Homeowners discount?
Bigger.
The phenomenally humongo discount?
If it existed, yeah.
Wow, that is big.
The Snapshot discount. It's new, it's a big deal, and it's finally here. Learn more at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Prices vary based on how you buy. Snapshot is not available in all states.
To the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike tonight. Oh, boy. I love that Bill McKibben. Thanks for booking him, Dez. He's awesome. Next time we need to get him for more segments. I know he was busy
being arrested or something like that. Doing this massive civil disobedience.
Yes.
Thing,
so. That, of course, is the lovely Desi Doyen. She's producing our broadcast tonight. She's also my lovely co-host on the Green News Report. Heard coast to coast and around the globe on fine progressive radio stations near you. What? It's not near you? Then call your progressive radio station. Call your fine progressive radio station and ask them to run it. We're going to play today's Green News Report here shortly. But a quick update. We were hoping to get Robert Steierwalt here from the Vermont Emergency Management Agency in this segment.
Yes, but they've been called into a meeting and update, so he'll have some fresh news for us next hour.
What? Is there some sort of Vermont emergency? If you'd like to, if you're in Vermont and want to talk about the emergency, or in upstate New York or Massachusetts or Connecticut or anywhere up there in the Northeast where you feel that the media... the national media, in any case, is not properly reporting what the hell is going on, what you guys are dealing with. You are not alone. It may feel that way, but there's a lot of us out here who are with you, and we would love to hear from you at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. You can tweet me, by the way, at the Brad Blog. And you can tweet the lovely Desi Doyen at Green News Report if you are of the twittering sort. So let's do, you know, I got a lot on my mind. We covered a lot of it today on the Green News Report. 6 minutes of...
independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Oh, you say that very well. You're going to have to say that on Thursday's episode. Let's play that because it sets up a lot of the stuff that's on my mind that I'd like to talk about, not enough of this stuff is being covered. So very quickly, here's today's Green News Report, and Desi and I will be back with you with an extra added Green News Report extra as soon as we're done.
It's Tuesday, August 30th, 2011.
Hurricane Irene, special report, assessing the damage and the response.
We've just been devastated. We prepared for the worst, and frankly, we got the worst.
Catastrophic flooding in Vermont and other states.
And whatever else you want to say about journalism, it certainly shouldn't contribute to the manufacture of synthetic hysteria. And I think we may have done so with regard to this tropical storm, as it now seems to be.
The right wing's nutty response. Plus, making the link with climate change. The corporate media won't do it, so we will.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I live on the Gulf Coast. We put up with hurricanes all the time. In 1900, before FEMA, the local people rebuilt the city, built a seawall, and they survived without FEMA.
Yes, except for those 6 to 12,000 who didn't, Congressman Paul. This is your Green News Report. Des, I've been getting email and comments from folks in Wilmington, Vermont, the Catskills in New York, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, thanking us for our coverage at BradBlog.com of what is going on in their states as the mainstream corporate media, by and large, as soon as Irene blew past New York, seemed to have little interest in what was going on, even as states and cities around the Northeast were cut off by historic flooding. All the while, folks on the right, including Howard Kurtz of CNN, incredibly did their Sunday morning quarterbacking, calling the entire story hype.
Yes, the corporate media has an incredibly short attention span, and that's putting it kindly. This is definitely not over yet. Massive cleanup operations have begun all along the eastern seaboard in the aftermath of Hurricane Irene, with the full extent of the damage only now becoming evident. Hurricane Irene is now officially post-tropical storm Irene and still wreaking havoc throughout New England and into Canada. Along Irene's 1,100-mile path, more than 40 people are dead in the third deadliest storm in more than 30 years in the U.S., with record inland flooding, over 5 million people still without electricity, and economic losses and damage estimated to be in the billions from North Carolina to Vermont. Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin, in an interview with Democracy Now!, described the historic floods that inundated his state.
When you see Vermont-covered bridges washing down our rivers, those bridges have been there for hundreds of years, so they survived the floods of the 1928 and 30s. And what that means is that, frankly, we're experiencing flooding now in many areas of Vermont that is unprecedented in record-keeping.
Vermont's Governor Shumlin went on to point out the gaping hole in the media coverage of Irene. Any discussion of the link, the connection climate scientists have made between climate change and the observed trend toward intense storms like Irene and the implications for the future resilience of the nation's infrastructure.
We are getting more extreme weather patterns here in Vermont. We understand why, and we're going to work hard to not only dig out from this crisis, but to also ask some fundamental questions that I don't think are being focused enough in Washington, which is, how are we going to deal with a climate change future.
And yet, Des, on the right, you've heard people saying that folks on the left are blaming the hurricane on global warming.
Right. No one but right-wingers are saying that climate change caused Hurricane Irene. They're saying it made Hurricane Irene more intense. And, of course, natural disasters tend to bring out both the best and the worst in people. And while there is great praise for the emergency response, with over 2 million people successfully evacuated, we're also seeing a lot of worsts. As mentioned earlier, CNN media critic Howard Kurtz complained that the media overhyped the danger of Irene with its wall-to-wall coverage, and then it was conservative columnist George Will of the Washington Post scoffing at the media's alerting the public that danger was headed its way.
Frankly, the corporate media goes overboard in just about every situation, but I can only imagine how many more would be dead had the actions not been taken that were taken.
Perhaps then there would have been enough deaths even for George Will and Howard Kurtz. Then, congressional Republicans announced they will be holding federal disaster relief hostage to their political agenda. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is running low on funds after a record year for billion-dollar disasters.
I wonder why.
Disaster recovery used to be funded by Congress without question, but House Majority Leader Eric Cantor on Sunday said no additional disaster funding will be forthcoming without being offset by additional budget cuts from elsewhere. Meanwhile, presidential candidate and Texas Republican Representative Ron Paul thinks FEMA is the problem. Apparently, he believes people's own tax dollars should not ever be used to help them recover from a catastrophe. But that's news to New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a Republican, who praised FEMA's assistance for hard-hit New Jersey.
We have FEMA folks right here on site. They're working incredibly hard in providing things to us that we need.
Governor Chris Christie, that lefty pinko communist governor of New Jersey, actually happy that FEMA is there to help. For much more on all of these stories and those we could not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help us stay on your public airwaves to tell you the truth that the corporate media seems to have a lot of trouble with. Download us anytime on iTunes from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Good night, Irene, and good night, Irene.
So there you go. Today's Green News Report. Well done, Des.
Well, you too.
Well,
thanks.
Now Des is the managing editor. She shows up and with all the news, and all I do is,
heckle me.
Heckle you. Yeah, but you deserve it.
And everybody else.
So much, actually, in today's report, with everything that's going on, the response to it from the Republicans who are talking about cutting aid, cutting funding to hurricanes, getting rid of Ron Paul, God love him, wants to get rid of FEMA entirely. I mean, you got to give him marks for consistency.
Well,
when
this
it comes
is true.
To him.
This is true. But the thing about Ron Paul is, like you said, he has very consistent ideological views, but he's just wrong to say what he said about FEMA.
And let's play. We have a slightly extended version of Ron Paul's comments there that you heard. This was him, Ron Paul, yesterday, I think.
I think it was yesterday.
After the Hurricane Irene.
I live on the Gulf Coast. We put up with hurricanes all the time. In 1900, before FEMA, the local people rebuilt the city, built a seawall, and they survived without FEMA. And FEMA is not a good friend of most people in Texas, because all they do is come in and tell you what to do and can't do. You can't get in your houses, and they hinder the local people, and they hinder volunteers from going in. So there's no magic about FEMA, and more people are starting to recognize that, because they are a great contributor to deficit financing, and quite frankly, they don't have a penny in the bank.
All right, Desi Doyen, he says, the people have survived. He's talking about the great storm of 1900 down there in Galveston, which is his district. He says, the local people survived without FEMA.
Well, I'm sure that the people in Galveston would be very unhappy when they hear this, because FEMA was there on the job after Hurricane Ike in 2008. That, I don't know if you recall, but Hurricane Ike actually scoured clean whole islands in the Galveston mm-hmm. Island region.
Yeah.
And FEMA was there right after with food, with water, with emergency services. These are the people who have been trained to deal with natural disasters. And the last thing you want is for local and state officials for example, on the eastern seaboard who haven't seen a hurricane in some cases decades, mm-hmm. to suddenly have to gear up to deal with emergency management when you have experts who actually know what to do.
And I'm offended because he, and he said this again on CNN tonight. He talked about the local people in the Galveston storm of 1900 that they survived without FEMA. Now, to me, how many people died? You have family from Galveston.
Both sets of my grandparents lived through, survived the great 1900 storm. That was before hurricanes had any names. And it was estimated to have been, in hindsight, a Category 4, possibly a Category 5, 6 to 8 to even maybe 12,000 people. They don't know how many people died, but that's because there was no seawall at Galveston at that time. Because of the great 1900 storm, they built a 15-foot seawall and raised the level of the island. It cost millions of dollars even at that time, and it took, you know, over 10 years to get the whole project completed.
So when he says the local people survived without FEMA,
he's saying that, you know, they managed to rebuild their city without the federal government coming in to save them. And, you know, and that's...
Except for the 6 to 12,000 that died. Now, we don't know how many died in that actual flood.
Right, we don't know how many died afterwards. In the storm surge versus afterwards when they had to figure out how to dispose of the bodies that were left behind. They counted at least 6,000 bodies. More than that was probably swept away because many people were never accounted for.
And they kept washing up on the beaches.
Well, they basically, at the time, they had to... encourage men to volunteer at gunpoint to take the bodies out on barges out to sea where they dumped them. Then they then came back on the tide. So they then had to decide what to do with the bodies. They burned them in a funeral pyre for days and weeks afterwards.
And that would have been a job, had there been a FEMA at the time, that would have been a job that FEMA could have helped with after
Right, and it's getting the telegraph wires back up again. It was rebuilding the island after that. There was you know, decades worth of work that had to be done, and because the federal government was able to help a little bit, you know, but Ron Paul is wrong. This thing took decades to do, and Galveston never, ever returned to its former top spot as the biggest port in the United States, ever.
Speaking with Desi Doyen from GreenNewsReport.com. Bradblog.com. Brad in for Mike Malloy. She's going to stick around. Please stay with us.
Good night, dear. Good night, Irene. Good night.
I pulled in to Nazareth. Was feeling about I just need some place where I can lay my head.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com in for Mike tonight. Please stop by the chat room at Bradblog.com. It's a lively chat going on over there as usual. And the lovelies for Earth, Jeannie Dean, and even Desi Doyen are in and out of there every now and again. So please stop on by and say hello over there. We'd love to hear from some of you folks up in the Northeast who are dealing still with the repercussions of Hurricane Irene, which you heard George Will in that Green News Report sniff, you know, just, tropical storm Irene, I guess. Like...
I know, as
matter.
If somehow if you call it a tropical storm, if you call it a hurricane and it's only a Category 1, that it's hardly worth the media's paying attention to it.
Well, this completely ignores something that I would think they understand in 7th grade science class. The Category 1, 2, 3, and 4, and Howard Kurtz, pay attention from CNN, you know, these categories are about wind speed.
Right. And they have nothing to do with storm surge. And storm surge is where the most deaths occur in hurricanes. Storm surge is when the winds push that water out in the ocean, and that's a lot of water that they push up. In Katrina, it's estimated that the storm surge was somewhere between 25 and 37 feet, depending upon where you were.
And these storms, these more violent, more more extreme storms because they have more moisture in the air
and
due to
global
warming.
And more energy because of the warm surface temperatures
that,
of the sea.
That's Desi Doyen, by the way. Did I mention that this segment?
No, we didn't.
Just jumped in. It was great. But Peter Shumlin, the governor of Vermont, certainly understands. We're going to be talking with someone from the Vermont Emergency Management Agency in the next hour. But like I said, we do want to hear from you folks in Vermont. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Let us know how you're holding up out there in all those towns that are cut off from the world. Also Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York in the Adirondacks, Catskills. Sorry, Manhattan. Sorry, Howard Kurtz, that we couldn't deliver you a Katrinaville there, as the rude pundit put it. Let me actually, because we're going to run up on the break here, and I want to get to Governor Peter Shumlin. He seems to get it. Here is what he said, the Vermont Democratic governor, dealing with what's going on up there in Vermont.
So the point is, we are getting more extreme weather patterns here in Vermont. We understand why, and we're going to work hard to not only dig out from this crisis, but to also ask some fundamental questions that I don't think are being focused enough in Washington, which is, how are we going to deal with a climate change future in terms of transportation infrastructure, where we build, how we plan, how we build our highways and transportation infrastructure? How can we do better to ensure that we're not continuing to sort of lurch from crisis to crisis?
Now, this puts us into the intersection of what both Bill McKibben is saying and what Governor Shumlin is saying and what all the climate scientists are saying, which is we can expect to see more intense and extreme, more frequent intense and extreme weather events, such as these tornadoes, such as flooding, such as hurricanes, and our infrastructure we already know is crumbling. So if we know that these things are coming up in the next 10, 20, 50 years, how are we going to plan ahead for this so that we don't end up getting huge budget hits trying to deal with these disasters?
We are not going to deal with them because we have a psychotic Republican Party on one side and we have a cowardly Democratic Party on the other side who, you know, ought to be out there banging the drum every day like that, like Peter Shumlin was up there just now, Democratic governor of Vermont, facing the costs of inaction. The Democrats ought to be up there every damn day raising holy hell, saying, here's our plan, here's what we need to invest in, we cannot wait. And look, if the Republicans want to hold that up, want to keep that from happening, fine. There's an election coming up, in a year or so. Let's have it out at that point.
And this is the jobs program. This is what President Obama has been trying to talk about when he makes all of these speeches about infrastructure and clean energy, specifically infrastructure. If we can get this infrastructure bank going that the administration is trying to push and Democrats are trying to push, then perhaps we might also get those construction jobs back. You know, there's a lot in America that needs to be rebuilt. The money is there. It's just a matter of getting Congress to agree.
Well, he does talk about it, doesn't he?
He does talk about
very
it.
Very eloquently.
Very, very. He says very nice, pretty words about it.
Pretty words. And for all you folks up there in Vermont, pretty words are coming your way. I'm sure that'll help. Jeremy up in Burlington, hang on the line. If you want to get in, 877-520-1150. Would love to hear your thoughts. We'll take right-wingers, too, who want to tell us that climate change isn't happening and we're just imagining all of this. You're listening to Brad in for Mike Malloy. Please stay with us. A lot more ahead.